The Thundering Herd with Colin Cowherd is brought to you by the full juicy flavor of Johnsonville sausage. Visit Johnsonville.com for affordable recipes that are perfect for game time or any time. Johnsonville, sausage is all we do.
This is the Thundering Herd on ESPNRadio.com. Now,
Bruce, Gunga Dan, living is
the Thundering Herd with Colin Cowherd.
It's incredible!
On ESPNRadio.com.
I don't know if this is a lead story. There's a Phil Jackson story. There is a little recruiting stuff. There's a lot of Super Bowl stuff. I saw where Drew Brees is, and the Saints rolled the dice. They could have given him a contract last year. They decided to wait it out. You know, you're rolling the dice on that. Well, that kind of came up snake eyes for the Saints management, because Drew Brees is going to sign a contract, and he's going to sign a big old fat contract. And it's interesting because we were talking this morning, if the quarterbacks are the most valuable people in the league, and they are, let's just get past that, especially in today's NFL, can't touch the receivers, can't bump into a quarterback. It's a quarterback league, period, end of story. So the top 10 quarterbacks are probably the top 10 highest paid guys, or should be. What if you paid quarterbacks based on what they were worth? Now, that's very interesting. It's not about stats. What is your value? Now, think about this. Why do school teachers not get paid as much as an air traffic controller? Well, school teachers teach our kids, the foundation of our country. But they're deemed as more replaceable because there are 500,000 in the country. Whereas if you're an air traffic controller at O'Hare Airport, the busiest airport in America, you'll make 4 to 5 times what a teacher will, because there are not many people who can do that. It's really, really hard, and that's the busiest airport in America, and they have the best air traffic controllers. So we sat down this morning, who should be the highest paid quarterbacks if it's about value? Now, I always said that Kurt Warner, after Peyton Manning, you could make a legitimate argument, he should be the second highest paid quarterback in the league. Because if he leaves, Arizona's wobbly ownership, Arizona's wobbly history caves in. Mark my words. I love Matt Leinart, but they're not winning that division so easily next year if they win it at all. So we all acknowledge that Peyton Manning is the most valuable player in the league. Peyton Manning doesn't play for the Colts. Even Colt players acknowledge, you know, not the same team, not the same franchise. But look at Drew Brees. And you know I'm a Tom Brady fan. I think you could make an argument Brady barely cracks the top five. If you were paying quarterbacks what they're worth, if Drew Brees left New Orleans, that's not the same franchise. To me, there's no question Drew Brees should be the second highest paid player in the league. Now, a lot of times in sports, Michael Jordan was the best player in the league for 8 years, but wasn't the highest paid player. Then he was largely paid at the end of his career for all the great stuff he did earlier in his career. That's generally how it works in sports. When you're really the best player, you're not necessarily the highest paid. They pay on the way out the door. And at the end, when he was getting $30 million a year, Jordan probably wasn't worth $30 million, but he was the previous 7, 8 years. But I think you can make the argument that the most highest paid player in the league should be Peyton Manning, and the number two guy should be Drew Brees. Because both of the fabric of the franchise, and in New Orleans' case, the culture, the fast, high-living, fast-living, crazy offense, you take Drew Brees out, the Saints aren't even the same franchise. And, you know, I got to a list today. I think Favre is incredibly valuable to the Minnesota Vikings. I think Big Ben feels like the Pittsburgh Steelers. But what's interesting about value is Tom Brady, to me, falls into about fourth or fifth because Bill Belichick hurts his leverage. Is that Belichick is such a profoundly smart coach. Brady gets hurt. Matt Castle wins 11 games. So Brady, to me, doesn't have nearly the value of Drew Brees, even though most would argue at this point Brady's considered the more elite quarterback. Whoa! Sometimes you get a pleasant surprise. I knew OC Umanyora was going to be on. I thought it was tomorrow, and I saw him, and I'm like, sweet. OC stopping by the set. How you doing, big guy?
I'm doing well, man. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. You were in this thing a few years ago. Yeah. Much like the Saints,
yep.
You were facing the great quarterback. You had no chance.
Yep.
You like being the dog in that game? You think the Saints have a puncher's chance?
Wonderful. It was wonderful being an underdog because basically you have no pressure going into the game. You just go out there, and whatever happens, happens. Nobody expects you to win anyway.
Right.
So if you play well and you win, you shock the world.
And let's be honest, you know about these Saints.
Right.
Talk about this offense and how lethal it is.
Very, very dynamic offense. I think they can run the football, they can pass the football, they can do whatever they want to out there on the football field. I think Drew Brees is, even though he's not getting recognition, he's definitely still an underrated quarterback, in my opinion. He picked us apart.
Yeah, no, you know, you defensive linemen, you call out signals, you try to confuse them. Is he, when you face him, one of the sharper, more focused guys?
Extremely sharp and focused, man. And, you know, he has a calmness and a coolness about himself. And he was outstanding that day.
You know, OC Umanyora joining us, the Herd on ESPN Radio. You know, I'm kind of wondering if we're going to get the decoy Reggie Bush.
Right.
Or
the actual
Reggie Bush. Mm. If you could, OC, go back and talk about when you played the Saints.
Mm.
How do you attack Reggie? If you spend too much time on Reggie, but he's so dangerous.
Right.
As a coaching staff, how do you prepare for Reggie?
Right. Basically, they talked about, you know, the type of player he was and how explosive he was, and we tried not to let him get loose. But you can't focus too much on Reggie Bush because the real guy that you need to focus on is Drew Brees. He's the one who's pulling the trigger. He's the one who's getting everybody out. He's the one who's making all the calls. So he's the head of the snake, and that's the guy who you have to get to.
How is their offensive line? Because the feeling is whatever quarterback gets pounded this Sunday is going to lose.
Right.
How is their offensive line?
I think they're okay. I think the Saints' O-line is okay. I think the Colts' O-line is okay. But I think the quarterbacks is what's making those offensive linemen look that much better because they're very, very elusive in the pocket. They step up. They slide left. They slide right. They don't give you a good angle to get to them all the time. And they're very, very aware of where the rush is coming from, both of these guys. And that's why they haven't been sacked a lot. But individually, as offensive linemen, I think they're okay, but I'm not quite sure that they're great offensive linemen.
Yeah, you know what team actually had a great offensive line at the end of the year was the Jets.
Right,
you
absolutely.
Know, they really did. Nick Mangold and Brickashaw.
Brickashaw Ferguson and Faneca, they're good offensive line.
Yeah,
solid.
They never get talked about because the defense was so good and Sanchez was so good, but that offensive line. OC Umanyora, 5-Hour Energy, joining us in the Herd on ESPN Radio, of which I've already chugged one today.
Have you?
No, you know what? It's
good.
And I'll tell you something. Of all the things we promote, I use it. I have one almost every day.
Absolutely.
Do you have it before games?
Before a game, I drink it. Before every game.
Yeah.
5-Hour Energy, man.
You don't get the crash.
No. Not at all. You just, you know, you stay up the whole time.
All right. Let's address. You were on radio. Said, listen, man, Star didn't get as much playing time.
Right.
I totally get it.
Right.
What you said is basically, and it's being perceived as highly controversial.
Right.
Go back to what you said and what you mean.
I think basically, you know, I love the Giants. I love that organization. I love that team. And I'd much rather be there than anywhere else, you know. But I think me getting up in age and, you know, I'm just almost my eighth year in the NFL right now. So I don't really have a lot of time left to, you know, to really be a backup player or, you know, coming in on third down and doing things like that. I don't have the time for that right now. I'm entering the prime of my career, and I need to play, and I need to be in a place where I'm going to be on the football field and help the team win. And if it's with the Giants, I would love that more than anything. But if not, then, you know, it is what it is. I completely understand. I'm not being disrespectful to any of them. I haven't said anything negative about the team itself. But, you know, for me personally, I have to do what I have to do to become successful.
Well, and OC, this is why I back players, is professional athletes have about 8-9 years of income.
Right.
Now, it's tremendous, but you get taxed, you got managers, you don't get nearly as much as they say.
Right.
And so I've always sort of backed players. Would you be, for you, would you be willing to go to a lesser organization for starting time?
Would I?
It's a million-dollar question.
Would I be willing to go to another team to play?
Yeah, that's not as formidable as the Giants.
As the Giants? That's a good question, man. That's something that me and my agent would have to sit down and really discuss and come up with an answer for. But I want to play, you know, and I feel like I can play football and I can get after the quarterback and I can play the run. I really feel like that, and I feel like I can help a team win. And just being there, sitting down and not doing anything, it's not something I'm willing to do anymore.
A friend of the Herd on ESPN Radio, OCU Mignora, always great to see him. You look at, just go back to the underdog. Giants win the Super Bowl as an underdog, and it surprised me. It was like a 13-point line spread. And let's go back to the game.
Okay.
Now, it was very clear. I've been called a Patriots homer, but it was very clear to me in that game the defensive line for the Giants were absolutely controlling the game.
Right.
It was much easier for the Giants to pick up yards than Brady.
Right.
Other than that one drive at the end, they couldn't move the rock.
Right.
When in that game, as an underdog, from a Saints perspective, when in that Super Bowl did you guys start saying, we're better than this team today?
I think it was the first, after the first series of the game, and we had hit him I don't even know how many times at that point, and I was like, man, what's going on out here? These guys are not going to be able to protect. And if they can't protect, then they don't stand a chance of winning the game at all. I mean, Strahan was coming. Tuck was coming. It was so much fun. I'll never forget that game.
I remember the first play of the game when you guys set the tone. Do you?
Me and Barry Cofield, we hit him.
They tried to reverse, and I remember turning to a buddy. I'm like, Belichick's out taking the room here, man. You know what was interesting about that? You played him the last game of the regular season. I was in New York that weekend in an Irish bar, probably drinking too much.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched the game, and I watched it with a Giants fan. And he's like, you know what? I think Eli threw a pick late.
Right.
How much confidence, as an underdog, how much will the Saints need to get a lead?
Mm-hmm.
Will the Saints? What if the Saints don't play well early as a dog? Does that get into your head?
Oh, it's gonna be bad for them. If Peyton goes out there and they're down 14-0, it's gonna be disaster for the New Orleans Saints. I don't see a way in which they're gonna be able to come, especially if Freeney plays. They turn those pass rushes loose, it's going to be a problem for New Orleans. So I think it's going to be important for them to stay close throughout the game, and then at the end somehow find a way to pull it off.
OC, are you surprised the Saints made it? Did you feel like they were the best team you saw this year?
After we played them, I thought they were going to go undefeated, for sure.
The worst butt-whipping?
This year, no, the worst one I saw was when we played the Panthers.
Yeah, that was just
a bad
game.
I was just like, oh, my God. But the Saints, they outplayed us, they out-schemed us, they just totally beat us up.
Yeah, after that game, did Tom Coughlin just say, listen, better team today?
We weren't thinking, we didn't think the season was going to tank the way it did. I mean, obviously, we were 5-0, we had just lost one game. I mean, 5-1 wasn't a bad record, it was actually a very good record. So he was just like, we didn't play well at all, we're going to move forward from this. But unfortunately, we weren't able to do that.
What's it like playing in a Super Bowl? Simple question. You walk out on the field. What's it feel like?
It feels surreal almost until they blow the whistle, and then you realize, okay, you almost like snap out of a trance. You're like, okay, we're actually playing football here, because all the shenanigans that's going on after that, all the stuff that's taking place, you kind of get sidetracked from the actual game.
Sure.
And as soon as that starts, you just realize that you're actually playing football, and you just go on from there.
Were you nervous?
Very.
You were?
I remember I had my throat was dry. I couldn't swallow. I was hyperventilating a little bit. It was bad at first, but as soon as everything starts, you just forget all about that.
So you were, it's cool that an athlete would say, I was nervous.
Oh, absolutely. I was very nervous. I get nervous before practice. I'm just that type of person.
You get nervous?
Before every practice.
Really?
I do, because I practice hard. You know what I mean? Like, to me, I feel like the best way to be a good football player is to practice the way you're going to play. So I go in a practice with, like, a game-type mentality, you know, almost. But not the full thing, but I go into practice with a real strong mentality. So I don't like to be blocked in practice. I don't like none of that. So, to me, I get nervous before practice.
Are you nervous right here with me? Because I'm a very physical host.
You're a good guy, though, man. You know what I mean?
Okay.
You're a good guy, so I'm not really nervous
right now. Because sometimes, my wingspan, I get very physical during interviews, and I know I'm kind of a relentless interviewer. I'm
all
moving closer. Hey, five-hour energy. Hours of energy now. No crash later. I use it. I'm not being paid for this. He is, but I absolutely believe in it. For guys with long hours.
All right. You need that.
Energy with no crash.
No crash at all, man.
Great seeing you,
man. Thank you so much, Kyle.
All right.
I believe you.
All right, man. OC Yomanyora. Whoa. It is known as the catch, and the duo responsible for making it happen. Join us in the Herd on ESPN Radio. Dwight Clark and Joe Montana. And Dwight, you had a nice career. You were a really good player. You ever think to yourself, hey, people, I did more than have one great catch?
I think that to myself, but I'm just, there's a lot of guys that have careers, and they don't have a signature play, so they you know, people remember him, but not really that well, I guess, you know.
Well, that's not the play that I remember most about the Wave. Honestly, we were playing the Saints. They were kicking our rear end at home.
Right.
And I hit Dwight on a little crossing route, and it really turned one of the plays that turned the game because we were getting beaten. The field was an absolute mess, and Dwight took him, drug him all the way across the field and went, I don't know how long it was for a touchdown.
It was 73 yards.
He barely remembers.
I knew it was 60 plus.
He's like one of these baseball guys remembers hits in June.
But that's the one I remember more than even, I mean, the catch, yeah, everybody remembers. But that play right there for me sticks out in my mind. What was typical of him is that people forgot how fast he really was.
You were a real burner.
Yeah.
You were one of
I was a blazer.
You were a big guy who could run.
Yeah.
Remember that was in the era where the receivers were much smaller.
Right.
Do you remember the first time you saw it on TV? Like, do you remember, Dwight, when you went home and ESPN wasn't nearly as big and you're like, wow, that was a great catch?
I don't remember that. What I remember is waking up the next day and it being on the whole front page of the newspaper. That's when I thought, wow, that was pretty cool.
Do you remember, Joe, the first time you saw it? Not as a player, but on TV?
I didn't see it until I was in the locker room and they showed it.
Yeah, he got knocked down.
I didn't see the play. I didn't see the catch. I just heard the roar of the crowd, so I figured he caught it. I didn't think it was that high. But when I let it go, I figured, okay, figured it was about an arm's length above
sure.
his head.
No,
he caught the ball. All right.
I was just in Los Angeles at the Annenberg Sports Photography exhibit, which is the best sports photographs in the history of the business. And yours, along with one with Muhammad Ali, are seen as one of the two or three iconic sports pictures in the history of sports photography.
Wow.
It's pretty amazing.
What's amazing about the shot is you see his fingertips. He's catching it with his fingertips and holding it in. And then I think that's when you look close at the photo, because otherwise you think he's just catching the ball, but you look that he's actually got his fingers trying to hang on to the ball.
The scary part about the whole thing is, you know, it was pretty high. And the one picture, you see my hands are kind of flat. And there's somebody that showed me, you know how when somebody just holds the button down, it just clicks one picture after
sure.
another. Well, you can see the ball hit my hands, and then it separates from my hand. And then what Joe's talking about is I was grabbing it for the second time. So should have got credit for two catches on that play.
Joe Montana, Dwight Clark, good guys and NFL legends. It's the Herd on ESPN Radio. You know, the league now, we often say on our show, the NFL's a TV show, and they're the one sports league that gets it. They're American Idol with helmets.
Yeah.
And what they've done, they've essentially decided, we're going to make this an offensive league. You can't touch receivers. If you breathe on Tom Brady, there's a flag. Do you sometimes, as prolific as you were, Joe and Dwight, do you look at the league now and think, man, this would have been really fun? Because, Joe, you got clobbered. I mean, you got hammered when they allowed that stuff. It's like wrestling.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's nice to stand back there when you know you're not going to take a big shot all the time. But, yeah, it would be fun to be in the league. I mean, especially as a quarterback and receiver. I mean, you can't ask for it. You're in every play. So,
yeah.
Running game's been so diminished.
Yeah, only a handful of teams that left to try to run the ball.
Yeah.
When you guys look at a game like this, and you were, and the 49ers were so important to the league. I mean, if you look at the league, the Niner era in the West Coast offense, and Joe Montana and Dwight, you were part of that. Do you feel, watching Peyton Manning, that he's evolved the position? I mean, from the audibles on every play? I mean, because the NFL has historically kind of evolved every 10 years.
Well, you know, he's really gone back, I think, to where it used to be. I mean, a lot of the quarterbacks years before that, before we played, were calling their own plays. I think Bradshaw ended up, you know, later in his years being able to call his own plays. And it takes a lot of time, and it takes an offense that you can cut down. You couldn't do it in our offense. But we go into a game plan, we're having 130-some passes, and you have two and three formations for each play. And you got for a quarterback, you had to memorize that because when you got signaled to play, you only got the play. And then you had to know what formation Bill wanted in and what order he wanted of those three or two that he had it. So it would be fun calling your own plays and playing today. And Peyton has certainly done a tremendous job at it, but I promise you, he spends as much time at it as a coach.
Absolutely. That was Joe Montana. This is the Herd on ESPN Radio. He is a pretty remarkable guy to watch because there are times I think he's the only guy in the current NFL where I look at and think you could put a whistle around his neck and he could be a head coach today in the league.
I think he's just very unique. I don't think you're going to see many people like him that is just given the freedom to do what he does. And, you know, even when I scouted him in at Tennessee, he would come out and say, you know, for the scout team, that safety's 10 yards deep, and he would direct where the scout team would line up against, like the team they were getting ready to play, not the coaches. He would do it. So he's been doing this a long time, and he's just a special guy, I think, and I don't think a lot of coaches would have confidence just to give that freedom to a lot of quarterbacks.
When you go back and look, and I guess my point is, I mean, the Saints are virtually invisible in this Super Bowl because of the Colts. In those early Niner championships, you were a little under the radar. West Coast fans, I grew up in Seattle, I got my Niner football, but the NFL's a regionally televised league. People in Florida didn't see a lot of the Niners. Did you like going into Super Bowls a little under the radar, or when you were now legends at the end of your career? Did you prefer either?
I mean, it did matter. I think at that point in time, you see whether you're underdog or not, and the coaches use it to a certain degree,
sure.
But all you know is you're in the championship game, and it doesn't really matter. You got as good a chance to win the game as the guy across the line from
yeah.
you. So I never looked at it that way. That's why I can't even remember whether we were underdogs or not. I'm just trying to think back.
We're not allowed to look at the point spread.
That's right. And, of course, nobody in the league does.
Right.
Vegas does not exist. It's just a mythical place with slot machines. Joe Montana and Dwight Clark.
Yeah, we're not allowed to, but they have to put out injury reports.
Yes. And publish them in every American newspaper. Sprint NFL mobile live information here. Folks, this is something we've talked about all week. It's the only mobile live app that gives fans around-the-clock NFL Network TV coverage. If you want to watch Super Bowl press conference, player interviews, interviews from Media Day, everything else covered by the NFL Network. We are not the NFL Network, but they do a tremendous job. Sprint NFL Mobile Live, great company. You guys have been part of it before. Certainly appreciate you guys coming on. Anything you want to add to NFL Mobile Live? Or did I cover it?
I think just the website, you know, if they're looking for more information on there, they can go to sprint.com/NFL.
Good seeing you guys. Joe Montana and Dwight Clark, as a 40-ish-year-old guy, in my childhood growing up, you know, you were part of a really special time and moment, and the NFL just continues to evolve. But you're always great guys. You both look fantastic. I saw Marcus Allen yesterday, and he's apparently suiting up. Got 2% body fat. It's like, Marcus, stop doing sit-ups. Go have a hamburger, please. Good seeing you guys.
You too. Thank you.
Good seeing you. Thanks for having us.
Whoa. Well, I'll tell you what. You got to give him credit. This whole social networking stuff, some people have embraced it. At ESPN, Bill Simmons has really embraced it. And it's become a big part of Bill Simmons' entire package. Ocho Cinco has done a better job with this social networking than any athlete in the country. And this week, he did a really interesting thing. He created the Ocho Cinco News Network, and he had to go cover the guys for Media Day. And I saw Susie Colbert's story. See, Chad, see what a pain it is to be a news media guy? See what a pain it is?
No, it wasn't a pain. It was extremely easy, very easy, especially when it's coming from a player.
Oh, come on. Now you make us look like a bunch of, well, whatever.
That's exactly what you guys are. You're right.
All right. When you look, Chad, as a star player in the league,
right,
this is the biggest game in the world. Is there a danger that a Reggie Bush, Reggie Wayne, could you picture yourself in this game? Can you try to do too much because of the energy around the game?
No, not really. Not really. We call it a controlled energy. We call it a controlled focus when you play games of this magnitude. As players, we know the magnitude of the game, but we don't approach the game as it being a Super Bowl. You approach the game as it being another game, and you just relax and you just go and play.
Do you think players, as much as you say that, isn't it hard to perform when you're anxious or nervous? How could you not be nervous, Chad, if you're playing in this game?
Well, for one, you've been playing football for almost 20 weeks. And again, certain players are able to see it as just another game. Some players aren't. As all of us prepare for games different ways, I can only speak from my perspective. If I was to get to that point, which, you know, we were three games away, I would approach it that way as I do any other game.
Do you feel the Colts are here because of the team, or do you think the Colts are here mostly because of Peyton Manning?
Well, because of it, I mean, it's a team effort. You know, Peyton Manning doesn't do everything, but he is the fuel that keeps them going, and he's a reason, one of the main reasons why they continue to win the games that they have. But this is, of course, it's a team game.
Chad Ochocinco joining us, The Herd on ESPN Radio. The AFC is generally considered a little stronger than the NFC, though not always the case. The Giants beat the Patriots. Do you feel this year, looking back, for all the teams you played, Chad, do you think the AFC is better than the NFC?
I think so. I think the AFC is extremely, extremely, extremely good. The defenses in the AFC are more difficult than those in the NFC. I mean, that's how I feel. And, I mean, not to take anything away from the AFC teams, but the NFC teams are good. But I think the more quality of defense is played in the AFC, most definitely.
What was the most talented, maybe not necessarily best, but what was the most talented roster you felt the Cincinnati Bengals faced this year, Chad?
The most talented would probably be it's out of the Jets and the Packers.
So to you, the Jets.
It's hard to leave out Baltimore and Pittsburgh, man. I mean, those four defenses right there, it's not even fair.
The Jets were not, in your opinion, though, a mirage. You feel their personnel is good enough to compete at the highest levels from this point forward?
Yeah, with the confusion and the pressure packages and the pressure that they present, you know, that's why they're so good. That's why they were number one.
Do you have a strong feeling about the Saints and the Colts in this Super Bowl? Do you feel strongly either way come Sunday?
Well, you know, I love the Saints. I love what they've done throughout the entire season. I love what Drew Brees has done. But I think, you know, I have to go with the AFC. I got to go with the AFC.
Do you think it will be high scoring as everybody predicts?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Of course.
Do you see Drew Brees potentially outplaying Peyton Manning?
It could happen. It could happen. I mean, it's Sunday. Anything is possible on any given Sunday. So you never know what's going to happen. But based off of what Peyton has done all season long, when he plays four quarters, he's dangerous. And Sunday he'll be playing a full four quarters.
By the way, Chad, you have said you will play well beyond the mid-30s. A lot of people, most elite NFL receivers, kind of swirl down into the tank about 35, 36 years old. Do you still stand by that? You will be a star in this league into your mid-30s and beyond?
Yeah, in my 40s I will be, yeah. Is that okay?
Yeah, I don't believe it, but I think it's nice to believe that. I don't believe you can do it.
Of course
no,
you can.
I just don't see it happening. What about Plaxico Burress? Will Plaxico Burress come back and have an impact?
Of course. Why wouldn't he? 6'5", he's off.
He took 2 years off.
Okay.
Yeah, but you know when athletes take 2 years off, they never, even Michael Jordan didn't come back. He wasn't the same guy.
I mean, he can still shoot the ball and play the game. He might not be elite, but he can still play the game.
So you think Plax will come back, play the game? Will he be elite to you?
Yeah, he'll always be elite in my eyes based off of what he's done. If I'm correct, he does have a Super Bowl win, right?
Absolutely, and he was a huge part of that Super Bowl win.
Okay, there we go.
Ocho Cinco announcing the total amount raised for Feed the Children as a result of the Ocho Cinco and Degree Men Charity Challenge. Longtime supporter of Feed the Children, partnered with Degree Men to create the Charity Challenge, asking dudes to rise to the challenge and donate what they could to Feed the Children. We're against the clock. Chad, I appreciate you stopping by the show.
All right, thank you.
Whoa!
Here's one for the road.
You think we need one more?
Nah, better make it two.
All right, we'll get one more.
Two for the road in the herd.
Well, it's that time of the year. People are getting their taxes ready, and I'm always here to help. This is some good information for a lot of you guys to know. The costs incurred in sex change operations are now tax deductible. Yes, the U.S. Tax Court has ruled yesterday that hormone therapies and sex reassignment surgeries are necessary to treat gender identity disorder. And so, guys, you can write that off. You can write off that sex reassignment. Yeah. You can go to Ruth Chris Steakhouse, write that off, or you can do the other one. I mean, it's up to you. Crestview, Florida, 51-year-old Crestview woman had been warned about calling 911 for non-emergency reasons. She was arrested last week after her fourth call in 90 minutes. She was calling to report that her husband had taken her cell phone and wouldn't give it back. After she called again, she was arrested for abusing the 911 system. When she was searched prior to being placed in the patrol car, the phone was located in her jacket pocket. Hot pockets.
Well, go look. The big game is just a few weeks away. Who do you like?
Oh, Greeny, I'm picking Johnsonville Italian Sausage this year.
You know, coming from someone who's never actually played in the big game, I can see why you would focus on the food.
Well, then again, I do love the full, juicy flavor of a Johnsonville brat. And I do have that hot tub out back. All right, I'm going with the brat.
I respect the brat, but what do you mean by hot tub?
Surely you've heard of the brat hot tub.
Surely I have not.
Well, here you go. Heat up a roasting pan filled with beer and onions, then add grilled Johnsonville brats. It keeps everything warm and juicy well into the fourth quarter. Most people go with a standard roasting pan. I, of course, use a full six-person hot tub.
So this is your idea of the perfect game day party?
Oh, yeah, that and along with a 300-inch plasma, TV, a couch big enough for 100 of my friends, and, of course, a swimming pool filled with nacho cheese.
Sounds fun and gross. Am I invited?
Not a chance.
Take your party from good to great with the full, juicy flavor of Johnsonville sausage. Find great recipes at Johnsonville.com, same place we found the brat hot tub recipe.